Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. I'm here in the garage at the Cat Ranch, in the last days of the garage at the Cat Ranch. Well, you know, it's weird. I've talked about this a bit, and I say it's the last days, but I've not done anything yet, and everything, it happens relatively slowly with me, and I don't know why that is. I think maybe that's the way I can handle things. I don't know how you do things. Some people, it's just a, you know, when you have some movers come over or you do it yourself and you just clean the place out, clean the whole house out, clean the storage unit out, clean all of it out. Whatever you're doing, you're cleaning it out. I know I'm capable of that, but I don't do that. Obviously I have the luxury of a little time. Sometimes you got to get out for either, good reasons or bad reasons. You know, sometimes you're being run out, which is, I didn't mean to laugh there at the, whatever I thought of in my head. It was just the discomfort of that situation that I made up in that moment. I can react to things that happen in my mind and nowhere else. It's my freedom to do that. But when I moved the stuff out of the house, most of it was just slowly, piecemeal, in a way I can handle, carload by carload. Granted, I'm not moving across country, and that would make it more difficult and time-consuming, but I'm just doing it the way I can do it, the way I can handle the process. I have not moved anything, and I can. That's the point I'm trying to make. But I'm busy. You know, I'm overwhelmed with stuff. I do the podcast twice a week. I'm still shooting the second season of Glow. I'm trying to get some comedy together. And I'm getting things ready. These aren't problems. They're good things. But that doesn't mean I'm not anxiety ridden, full of dread about the world and about whatever I have to do tomorrow and everything else. But I'm trying to find the part where it's sort of like, no, this is great. This is what you worked for. And as opposed to, you know, and being in that work and excited about it, as opposed to being like, oh my God, what do I got? I got to what? Ah, fuck. And then in the back of my mind, it's like, yeah, but you chose this life, man, and it worked out. You know, for now, it's working out. So what are you complaining about it working out for? Because I'm tired and it's a lot of work for it to work out. Anyway, speaking about working and being in it for the long haul, that was something I rarely do. That's called a segue. Today on the show, I talked to Richard Jenkins. Richard Jenkins is somebody we all know. You may not think you know him, but you know him because he's been in a lot of movies. And for a long time, he was sort of that guy. And I think to some people, he probably still is. Oh, there's that guy. Who's that guy? That's that guy. But this guy, Richard Jenkins, is one of the great American actors. And you might remember him from his Oscar nomination, and I thought he had won it for The Visitor in 2008, but he was basically the ghost of the father on 6 Feet Under. He's been in a couple of Coen Brothers movies. He was in all the Farrelly Brothers movies. I actually saw him in his first film recently on TV. He was in The Witches of Eastwick, and he's been in a lot of movies. He was great in Flirting with Disaster, the David O. Russell thing he did, and he did I Heart Huckabees with David O. Russell. But anyway, He's been in a lot of movies. He was just in that LBJ movie with Rob Reiner, which I didn't talk to him about. But the movie he's in now and the reason why he's around, because he doesn't live here in LA, is for The Shape of Water, which I saw. I've seen a lot of his movies. I've seen a lot of the movies that are nominated. Anyway, it rained, massive rain here in Los Angeles, and it got chilly. It didn't get freezing, but it got damp, and it got chilly, to the bones chilly. And I am so fucking happy when it rains out here, I can't even begin to tell you. This city gets so fucking dry that you're like, am I going to just dry up? Am I losing water at an inordinate amount? Am I, because your skin gets dry, that no amount of lotion will help you? It's basically the desert, LA County, I believe. I believe I've heard that as a fact, so I'll present it to you as one. The new place that I'm in, where the cats are now, was so dry. It was so dry that there was so much static electricity in that house that I couldn't touch my cats because it just, it terrified them. I would shock my cats. I would go, come here, LaFonda, and I'd touch it and hear that crack, and then the cat would just spin out. You know what I mean? When you get shocked, it's not good for cats. It's disconcerting for humans, but I'm assuming that for a cat, it's very jarring. So they're all freaked out because I've been, you know, electrocuting them with my fingers for the past month. Anyway, it rained. And from living in the house here at the Cat Ranch for as long as I have, over a decade, much longer than a decade, 14 years or so, every time it rains, I would go into a panic. Fuck the roof. What about the roof? Is the roof going to... One time, like 12 years ago, right when I got the house, before I realized you got to clean off a roof, especially a roof with one runoff, water started pouring out of the cabinets because I didn't realize that you had to clean the roof and there was only one hole up there. And it just built up. There was like a foot and a half of water because the one hole got clogged up and water started, you know, pouring over the seal of the roof. So ever since then, that was traumatic enough that anytime it's about to rain, I freak out and I got to go look up on the roof. And some of you who have been with this show for long enough time remember when I stupidly climbed up the ladder when the woman I was dating was in the house at night when it started raining by myself, fell off the ladder right onto flat on my fucking back. And I realized how that happens. It's a terrible feeling to feel a ladder go out from under you a bit, start to wobble, and you know, it's like that second before a car accident. You're like, this is happening. That slow motion moment where you just cross over and you slam on your brakes, you're sliding, your brain knows enough from experience that you're not gonna stop in that gap. You're gonna keep going no matter how much you got those brakes on. And you have a split second or two to realize, like, I'm hitting the car. Same with a ladder. You're like, I'm up. Oh, it's not, I'm going down. And sometimes you can make a decision in that split second. Do you tuck and roll? Do you, you know, turn so you hit your back? Do you protect yourself somehow? Anyway. So I hear the rains are coming and I'm like, fuck the roof. But now I'm barely living over here, you know, and I freaked out. Like it was starting to drizzle and I came over here and I put that ladder up on that side of the house, which is a pretty steep, it's tall, to check out that roof. And just mounds of pine needles from my neighbor's tree. Anyway, the entire roof was covered with things that would clog the drain and flood it out. And I just immediately went into action. Where are the bags at? Do I got any bags? Because the drizzle's starting. So now I'm up on the roof. It's starting to drizzle. There's just mounds of pine needles everywhere. I got one super hefty construction site bag, you know, garbage bag. And then I got a bunch of little ones. So I'm up there. I fill that one up. No gloves on. I'm just using a push broom as a rake and just panicking, chasing, trying to get ahead of the rain so it doesn't make wet piles that rot the roof and then it doesn't, you know, drain properly. So I'm shoving these bags. I'm double bagging these shitty little bags, the ones, and I fill them up. There's like 8 or 9 bags. It's starting to rain a bit. I go up and down this ladder twice by myself because I'm an idiot. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a stubborn, dumb man. I might go out there right after this because I haven't looked up there since the rains, since they passed, by myself. And there was a moment there where I was doing it in retrospect, you know, the last time I came down the ladder and I looked down and I realized that it's wet, my shoes are muddy, you know, I'm about 20 feet in the air, and it's a long way down, and this ladder is not even great. All those thoughts went through my head in about a split second, and then it, you know, and then I realized, like, this is how you fall, and I'm about to fall. And I didn't fall, but I was kind of shook up. I was a little shook up when I got down. Everything's cool, but I'm telling you right now, I might go up the ladder. It's going to be a struggle for me right after I finish doing this. So, Richard Jenkins, The Shape of Water, and many other movies, but The Shape of Water is why he's here. And I generally don't even think to watch, I guess, what they call fantasy movies. And I thought it was because I just don't, I, you know, it's sort of like, aren't they for kids? What, you know, who, what, but then I realized, I didn't realize anything until I tuned in, because I wanted to be up to speed with what he's working on and what this movie's about. And I'm watching all the Oscar movies and the awards movies. And I just sort of poo-poo fantasy or animated. And I used to think it was because, like, you know, I'm just not that kind of grown-up who enjoys, you know, adult Disney movies or animated movies. And adult Disney movies, I don't mean that Disney movies by Disney. I mean the idea that that fantasy is for adults. Well, this is a very adult movie, The Shape of Water. And what I realized about fantasy is that because it's not essentially presenting itself to be about real people, and it's clear that it's not when there's a man-fish in the movie, but where it connects to emotionally is something deeper. Like, you know, I actually found myself more choked up and emotionally wrought by The Shape of Water than I would, you know, a movie about, you know, real people. Because you get very invested in the fish guy, and you get very invested in the mute lady. And, you know, there were points in the movie where I'm like, I don't know if I have the emotional fortitude to make it through this movie. It's killing me. Michael Shannon is demonic. The poor fish guy. Half fish, half man fella. But I don't know what's happening. I think I'm going through menopause, and, you know, I just get very emotional at things. But there is, you know, 2/3 of the way through that movie, I'm like, I just can't. Handle this. this better turn out okay. I can't do this. So anyways, Richard Jenkins is great in it. He's great in everything, and it was a thrill to talk to him. I was actually a little nervous because he seems like a very decent fella. He's nominated, as I am, for a Critics' Choice Award and a Screen Actors Guild Award. So I'm probably gonna run into him at the things. Yeah, he'll be in his suit, I'll be in my suit, but this is him and I not in suits in the garage, chatting it up. It's nice to see you. I was actually a bit nervous about this interview, and I've talked to a lot of people.
As was I.
You were?
Sure.
I'm driving over here because you seem like a reasonable, nice person. And I imagine you get that. But I talked to a lot of people, but I was just sort of like, are you sure he's, you know, he really feels like coming over, that kind of thing?
My question was, are you sure he really wants to talk to me?
So we're in the same boat.
Right.
Yeah, so it's going to work out. But when did you come in?
I've been here for about 4 or 5 days.
So you live on the East Coast, right?
I do.
So you got out before?
I did, but my wife got hit with a storm, and she's in the air right now coming in.
She made it out?
Yeah.
From where, Boston?
From Providence. But I said, if I ever had a chance to publicly thank Sean Bailey,
yeah,
who is a fireman in Pawtucket,
yeah,
and our friend,
uh-huh,
and our snowblow guy,
uh-huh,
his truck went out. So she wasn't going to make it to the plane.
Right.
And Sean came over and...
And he did it?
And he cleaned our driveway.
Well, there you go. He's got his shout out.
He's a great guy.
How far away are you from Providence, Rhode Island?
I am in Providence.
You're right in Providence. Mm-hmm. Hannah, how is that city doing? Because I started my comedy career in New England, and I used to do gigs around Providence. And like I did the Cranston Bowl. I did a... Cranston, Rhode Island, you familiar?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no... Everybody in Rhode Island knows everybody else.
Yeah.
Because it's like...
Yeah. Yeah. Melody, Rhode Island.
How's the governor? Oh, she's great. Yeah, she's great.
But it went through some tough times. I mean, my car got stolen, and I've never forgiven the city.
What year were you there?
Well, that would have been in, like, you know, probably the late 80s.
Okay.
In Boston, doing gigs, 89, 90, 91.
It's a great city now.
Yeah.
It's just a great city.
It turned around, right?
It did, absolutely. And we got there in 1970, and it was a burned out town.
Right.
There was nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just saw it build up.
It did. It's incredible. And I think, well, there's a lot of reasons for it. Who knows? But, you know, Brown University and Rhode Island School of Design,
yep,
and Providence College and Rhode Island College are all in Providence.
That's right. Right. What is it? Davio Square?
Davol.
Davol Square.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a comedy club called Periwinkles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember it?
I do.
And I was doing a gig there, and my car was stolen out from outside Periwinkles, and I really held the city accountable for years. Yeah. But I hear it's nice now.
It is. It's great. There's a lot of cultural stuff going on.
Are you still the director of a theater there?
No, I did that for 4 years. I was an actor. I came to Providence as an apprentice in this theater, the Trinity Repertory Company.
Right.
And I stayed as an actor for 14 seasons.
Well, where'd you grow up?
DeKalb, Illinois.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How far is that from Chicago?
60 miles west.
So that's too far.
It's corn country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you couldn't just go into Chicago. Like, you probably didn't have a relationship with Chicago.
Well, there was no theater in Chicago when I was there. Steppenwolf hadn't started. Those guys came out of Illinois State University,
which
was right next to where I went to school at Illinois Wesleyan. And they were a little younger than I was, but they went to Chicago and there was no theater.
Right.
So they started their own.
Right. There was comedy, though.
a lot of comedy.
Second City. The Compass Players years ago. Yeah. But no theater. I wonder have you ever thought of, like, what if Steppenwolf was around? You'd be a very different actor, I bet.
Do you think? If they had me.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It seems to generate a certain type of intensity.
It changed the city.
I mean, Steppenwolf
did, yeah.
It changed acting, I think.
It did. You know, I mean, it was a theater run by actors, for actors. It was all about performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever go and see those guys?
I saw their Sam Shepard play they did, Gary Sinise and John Malkovich.
Barry Child. Was it Barry Child?
True West. Yeah.
Oh,
When I go back, I go to Steppenwolf and see things. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, it's great.
Malkovich and Sinise were in True West in Chicago.
And they used to change parts sometimes.
Yeah. Wow. So how do you get into acting in DeKalb, Illinois? What was the family situation?
You don't. You just don't. I'd never seen a play, really. I used to go to the movies all the time.
Did you have a lot of siblings?
No, I'm an only child.
Only child in DeKalb?
In DeKalb, yeah.
Wow. You in the corn?
And mom, right across the street. I used to take a baseball bat and hit rocks into the corn.
Is that true?
Yeah, I did. That's true. My father was an only child.
Really?
My mother had one sister, so we were a small family.
Huh. Do you think that had an effect on you?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time alone. I daydreamed my entire youth away. Yeah.
And how close was the closest neighbor? Was it that situation?
No, they were right next door.
Okay,
but it was just across the street was a cornfield.
Uh huh. And you had friends?
Oh, I had a lot of friends.
Oh, good.
Yeah, good. A lot of friends.
What was your dad's business?
He was a dentist.
A small town dentist.
Yes.
How big's DeKalb?
Well, when I grew up, it was probably 15,000. Then it got probably 40,000 because there was a university there.
So everyone knew your dad, the dentist.
Everybody knew my dad, the dentist, which has got its ups and downs.
Plenty of toothpaste, toothbrushes, flossing at an early age. Your teeth are good. You learned all that.
I went back to a reunion, a class reunion, and one of my dad's patients had no teeth.
Uh-huh.
He said, well, this happened after your dad.
Yeah, you threw your hands up. I had nothing to do with it. So how did you find yourself moving towards acting?
I've always wanted to be an actor. I think I used to go to the movies every weekend, and I didn't really care what was on. That's the way I saw the world.
Yeah.
And I would think to myself, how do you do that? I mean, that's just really interesting.
Yeah.
So it was about seventh grade, middle school. I did a play, a one-act play.
Yeah.
And I came home, and I told my parents I was going to be an actor.
That was it.
And I walked out of the room, and I didn't know this at the time. In fact, this is a story that I found out after I was nominated in 2009.
For The Visitor?
For The Visitor.
Yeah.
And they did an article in my hometown paper, the DeKalb Chronicle.
Uh-huh.
And in it, Joanne Fox, who was my English teacher in middle school or junior high, and directed the play.
Right.
Told this story about my parents.
Which is?
Well, my mother called her up and said, you have to talk to my husband. He's being unreasonable. My son came home today and said he wanted to be an actor. And my husband said, I will not allow it. This is not going to happen.
Right.
This is not the way to make a living.
Right.
He'll starve to death. He's not doing this.
Yeah.
And she said, you have to speak to him. And so she put him on the phone. So my dad got on the phone. And yeah. Joanne Fox said, so you don't want him to be an actor? He said, no, it's not going to happen. So not going to happen.
Right.
And she said, okay, you put your foot down. But I want you to know this. You have to be willing to accept the fact that he will never forgive you for the rest of his life, ever. And my father, I never knew that. My father was my biggest fan. It was like, and I never got a chance to thank him.
Wow.
Because he was dead when this article came out. And it was, you know.
So he didn't, so that phone call changed him.
It did. And I never knew it. I mean, I figured my dad's glad I'm an actor.
Yeah, right.
And he must have been dying inside.
Right, at the beginning. Scared for you.
Scared. That I would starve to death.
Right.
Yeah.
And that usually turns out to be the reason why parents don't want their children to pursue this stuff. It's not it's just basic fear for their security.
Yeah, absolutely. And we lived in an area where you just didn't do that.
What? It's not practical anywhere.
No, it isn't practical. I don't care where you live. Exactly. It's not practical. It's the stupidest thing you can do.
It really is, yeah, and I'm not sure that's a lie.
No, I mean, young actors ask me all the time, how do you, I have no idea.
Yeah, no, there's no.
No, you know, everybody's got a different story.
Sure. And it's not a meritocracy. No. There's some weird storm. It's just, there's no way to give advice other than I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, work on your thing.
And kind of the only thing I say, if you're meant to do this, you'll figure it out.
Right, right.
You know, and if not, at least you'll know, well, this is not for me.
Yeah, but you know what the scary thing is, though? It takes a real, and it takes a certain kind of person to turn their back on it. You know, after, like, because... Right, you know, you get into it, whatever this is, you know, a number of years, and it doesn't seem possible after, so what am I going to do?
Right.
You know, it happened for that guy when he was 90. You know, maybe I'll give... You keep pushing that guy up, you know.
And now lifespans are longer.
Yeah, right.
So maybe I got 90, a shot. 94, 95.
Yeah, just got to keep working. So that's a beautiful story. And your mother was always on it?
My mother. I never got a chance to thank her. She's the one that said, wait a minute, put the brakes on here.
Yeah. Well, when did they pass? I mean, like, when they did not see your success? Or?
Well, they saw a little. I was in movies when they died. You know, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't see the fun part.
Right.
I mean, but I always, you know, I always supported myself as an actor. I didn't make any money. My wife was a teacher, Sharon. Uh-huh. She ran a dance program in an arts magnet high school. And she's a choreographer. So she had health insurance and good stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I was making $200 a week.
So where did you train?
I trained at Illinois Wesleyan. Harold Guskin is an acting teacher that I studied with. Is really the only one that I studied with.
It's a good school. It was a good program, or
it's but until you get out and start doing it. I met Harold after I left school.
At Wesleyan you just kind of did what you had
to do. Plays, yeah. And you know, it's like it's experience. You have, I mean, it's so much fun. It's really, it doesn't prepare you to be.
But you loved it. From that one act on.
I loved every second of it.
And did you do more stuff? Did you do high school stuff?
No, I didn't do anything in high school. I did The Mad Woman of Shio. I had 8 lines.
Uh-huh.
I got to college and I didn't know anything about acting, but I was in the theater department.
Right.
And
did you have to audition to get in?
Yeah, but I had to audition, and I did Big Daddy from Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, and I never even read the play. I just
got the monologue.
I just took the monologue. and it was like the stupidest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
So they must have been really hard up for students that year, because I got in. And you, when you audition, you had to audition for everything. You had to sign a sheet so they could keep track of it, and I never went to any of these things.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
The end of the year, the head of the department called me into his office, and he said, who are you? He said, I know you're in school because you're in my class, but he said, you, I'm looking at this sheet. You didn't audition for anything.
And but did you, or you just didn't sign in?
I didn't audition. I said, I don't know how.
Right.
I said, I thought you were supposed to teach me. he chuckled,
yeah,
and said, all right, you want to do this? I said, yeah, I do, but I'm a little intimidated by all this stuff.
Right.
So I went to summer stock that summer, and he said, if this works out, great. If not, you got to make room for somebody who wants to jump in here and do this.
Oh, really?
So his name was John Ficca, and he's another one that just was a big influence on me, and told me after, I think it was my senior year, he said, I think you can do this. I think you should pursue this.
Uh-huh. So once you snapped into shape,
it's all you need for somebody to say, I believe in you.
It's true. Yeah.
And even though you may suck,
yeah,
it's that, oh, wait
yeah.
a minute. He really means this, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have that and to have at least some enough self-esteem to believe them.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't have a lot of that. I believed it until I started really doing it. I thought, maybe he's bullshit.
That bastard. Now I'm stuck.
Now what do I do?
So who is this guy, Guskin?
Harold Guskin, G-U-S-K-I-N. Yes, he actually wrote a book called How to Stop Acting.
Oh, to get out?
No.
To be natural.
And Harold, we were in a theater company together, and he was teaching acting in his basement.
After college?
I was in graduate school at Indiana University because you need a graduate degree in acting.
Sure. Oh, you did? You went to?
For 1 year. I just went 1 year.
And that's where you met this guy?
Harold, we were in a touring company that toured on a school bus, and we performed, productions in all these different towns and colleges. And
really? Like you do one production and tour it across the country?
Yeah, we did three, and we went mostly the Midwest. And
this was during the summer? Or what kind of program?
Most of the year.
Really?
Most of the year, yeah. It was kind of a graduate thing we did.
What an odd thing.
It's really odd. Yeah.
What were they, one acts?
No, we did Antigone, we did Twelfth Night, and we did The Importance of Being Earnest. And I was playing John Worthing in The Importance of Being Earnest, and I was so awful that, I mean, it was just horrible. And
but that's not that deep a play, is it?
Well, that'll give you a clue as to my talent level. I have never been able to do a British accent.
Okay. Yeah,
I think what happened was after that play, I refused to do one after that. But Harold was in the
You got to learn that lesson.
You got to learn it.
You got to learn your limitations.
Your limitations, yeah. So Harold's in the play, and Harold was good. He was really good. And we did Antigone, too, and he was the soothsayer. And an actor got sick, and he came in, and he was the blind soothsayer. And he has, like, one huge speech.
Yeah.
And he comes in, and he's fabulous. And I knew he taught acting at his house. And I said, could I taking classes from you? And he turned to me and said, I wondered when you were going to ask. So that was...
And that was in Indiana?
That was in Indiana, yeah.
Indianapolis?
No, Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, Bloomington.
I went from Bloomington, Illinois to Bloomington, Indiana.
That's a good town.
Yeah, it is.
It's a weird little place. Yep. It's a little vortex of some kind.
It is, and in the middle is this beautiful university.
Yeah, with all the... It's all built from the quarry rock.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
It's gorgeous. All built from that one rock.
Yeah.
So, okay, so what'd you see? This is like, now that I talk to actors, because I act a little myself, since he was your primary teacher, I guess you would say, what was it that you learned that you still used, like craft wise?
Well, I really, I just never believe, you never believe that you're enough.
Right. Yeah.
It's got to be, it's like.
I woke up with that.
I've seen Laurence Olivier. I can't do that, And, his thing is, respond. Just be there, buddy.
Yeah.
Stop acting. Listen. What is she saying? Just respond,
Right.
And the first, I don't know why I'll tell this, but when the kind of the light bulb went on for me, I did a scene for him from The Glass Menagerie. And I was playing the Gentleman Caller, and I used to love David Wayne, and he did it on Broadway, and he had an album of it. And I copied that album.
Just did a mimic?
And the first line was, I said, hello there, Laura. And Harold was watching the scene, and I heard him say, what? I kind of looked at him, and I went, hello there, Laura. And he said, what? hello there, Laura. He said, what did you say? And I turned to him. I said, hello, Laura. He went, oh, okay, go ahead. And that's out for me. That was the moment where I went, oh, shit.
Be present.
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah.
It's me.
It is, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I keep thinking about it, you know, and obviously I haven't done anything huge, but I do these roles here and there, but it's sort of like you got to know what you can do, and then, you know, you show up for it. Because, like, I notice, like, with you and with a lot of great actors, that it's like they're being them. There's just different variations.
Absolutely.
There's an emotional regulator. It's a rare breed of person that's going to, you know, put on 90 pounds and you know, and change their dialect. And
I can do it unintentionally, but I can't really.
But like you said before, like, you know you can't do a British accent, so why bother with it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great ear. And I've tried, and yeah. I've on stage, I've done it actually a lot of times. I've never been happy with it. So I just, and you know, I've been offered films with British actors in it, doing a British accent. Are you out of your mind? I said, I could see them at the lunch table rolling around. And here he comes.
Here comes the Yank with his weird dialect. I guess that's true. I guess it's a different skill.
It is. And I mean, I do, I can do people from the South,
sure.
Because of my family, my mother's side of the family is from the South.
Oh, yeah.
So I grew up with that, you know.
From where? What part?
Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky people. Mm-hmm. So you go, what, your grandparents are down there?
My grandparents were. They moved to DeKalb.
Oh, so everyone was there.
They brought my mom. They came during the Depression.
Wagon?
It kind of.
Yeah.
They all came.
Yeah.
So all my aunts and uncles were farmers, and all from Kentucky, because my grandmother was a real matriarch, and they all followed her.
Right, that was sort of like
the Depression.
They thought there were jobs up there,
and there were. They opened a canning factory in the DeKalb area, and
they did all right for
and
themselves.
And so my grandfather was a night watchman in the factory.
Oh.
My grandmother was a cook at the hospital, and so they, and then others came up. You know, there are jobs here.
Yeah,
and,
come. It's good.
Some became farmers.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's fascinating how that.
I know.
When people, it's like, let's go where it's happening.
And my father just graduated from dental school, Loyola in Chicago, and he wanted to open a practice.
Start a practice at a growing city.
So he saw DeKalb had a college. So he rented office space, made up a fake appointment book for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And he said, I was asleep in my chair in the office, and a guy came in and said, woke me up. He said, I'd like to get an appointment for, and he said, oh, I looked at my book. I said, I'm booked for 2 weeks. and he wrote his name down. He said he left, and I said, I slept for 2 more weeks. And he came in. And,
that's the tale. That's the story.
That's the story.
The start of the business. Wow, man. So how do you get from Indiana?
I know.
But it's like, but it's interesting to me because you know, you make choices, you know, to do things, but that doesn't seem like the logical choice.
I when you look back on it, you think it's just weird. It's if I had just taken one other turn, who knows what would have happened? You know,
but you never thought to come out here. Your trip was theater.
I wanted to be in movies. That's what I always
you did.
Wanted. Yeah, that was my. And I came out here in 1975 after our daughter was born to see if I could make my way. And they said, here's your ass. Let us hand it to you.
Yeah, here you go.
It was just
have a good trip
really,
back.
Really, I was here for about 9-10 months, and it was, I just said, not, it's not.
Oh, happening. And that must have been, that must have been one of those things where, you know, you have a baby and you got to tell your wife that, like, I'm going to go to that horrible shithole out there. And
no, I said, I'm going to go out there and, hey, but 3 weeks when I get an agent, you'll come out and we'll get a nice house. Well, I didn't. I mean, you know, but I didn't know it was going to be.
Well, you had some confidence, it sounded like.
Yeah. Well, I had a friend who called me up and he had a series and he said, come on out, man. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
It's
that
easy.
That guy.
Easy for him.
That guy, you come out and like within a week, he's like, yeah, I got no time, man. Yeah, good luck with it.
Well, I knocked on his door. I said, geez, I'm on my way to Europe. But, you know, we're still really good friends.
And,
yeah,
okay.
He's still living out
Is
here,
he still
yeah.
an actor?
Yeah, he's an actor, yeah.
Well, how did you do jobs before?
No. I drove a laundry truck.
Right.
And I had 5 accidents.
In DeKalb?
No, in Chicago. My father-in-law, my wife Sharon is from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And after I graduated, after I left school, I got a job as an apprentice, I think, at Long Wharf Theater. But didn't start till September or something. So he got me a job. He worked for a laundry company, Union Linen.
Yeah.
He got me a job driving a truck.
A laundry truck.
And I had 5 accidents in 2 months.
Not your bag.
And one accident, I wasn't even in the truck.
How is that your fault?
I came out and it was gone. Oh. And I looked down the hill and it hit a car on the curb. a laundry bag fell off and hit it, knocked it out of into neutral and down it went. And there was a guy standing there with half his face shaved. Yeah. He had a razor in his hand. It's his car and there was no driver in this truck. It was brutal.
Not your thing.
No.
What is that tidbit of information that I saw that your boss was John C. Reilly's dad? Is that true?
Yeah.
How did that come up anywhere?
About the last week we were shooting Step Brothers, I said, so John, I knew he was from Chicago.
Yeah.
I said, what did your dad do? He said, my dad died at 59. He said, you know, he was, my kids never really knew him. My wife met him once or twice. He said he was vice president of a laundry. I said, oh, geez, that's amazing. Because my father-in-law worked at Union Linen. He said, my dad was vice president. As soon as he said, I went, oh, John Reilly. That was his name, too.
Yeah.
Said, John, he was my boss.
That's so wild.
He was the guy.
You knew that guy.
I knew that guy. And actually, he brought his boat out. My father-in-law had a little cottage on a lake outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
And John Reilly, the father, brought his boat out and all of his kids. And John C. Reilly was 5 at the time.
Right.
And I put all of his kids in the boat.
So
and
you
I was like 22, and I put John C. Reilly, picked him up and put him in the boat.
Did you tell him that?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Do you remember his dad? Does it make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember him. Yeah. He was like no nonsense, this guy. He was, you know, I was terrified of him, but he was nice to me, but he was the boss.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Old school boss.
Yeah. And he's, you know.
All right. So your big idea was to go to Rhode Island to act.
So the Long Wharf thing didn't work out. They stopped
in Chicago.
No, that was in New Haven, Connecticut. Yeah. But I was in Chicago. I was waiting to get a call to go work at the Long Wharf Theater.
Right, in New Haven.
Yeah, and they stopped their program for... It used to be a lot of theaters had companies.
Yeah.
Not anymore. And they were starting to phase them out even when...
What year was that?
1970.
Uh-huh.
And Arvin Brown was a terrific, wonderful man. He called me up and he apologized. And, you know, it was nothing, you know, they stopped the program. But so I went into New York to audition for any regional theaters. And Trinity Rep was one of the theaters.
Did you have an agent?
I have an agent.
So how did you know to audition?
I had shirts. Agent.
How do you know to? But you're married. Are you married at this point?
I was married. Yes, I called Theater Communications Group.
Yeah.
That had to do with auditions for regional theater.
Okay.
I said anybody coming in. They
yeah.
said, well, Trinity Rep's looking for somebody, but if you're not in town, it's no. I said no, I'm in town. I was on a cornfield in
DeKalb.
In DeKalb. And
down the street.
I went to New York. And this is true. I know this sounds like I'm making it up, but it isn't. The guy went in before me to audition. He had a guitar.
Yeah.
And he was playing and singing and beautifully. And I could hear the people in there laughing and clapping.
Yeah.
And you know, it was like a concert.
Killing.
And he came out and he went, good luck.
Yeah.
And he walks and I'm like, oh, God. So I go in and... I read something that they give me, and I heard, thank you. So I get in a plane, I fly home, that's not going to happen. But, you know, week later, I get a call. They want to hire you as an apprentice at Trinity Rep. And I was like, really? So we drove out to Providence, Rhode Island, and the first play I did was... It was kind of a musical about Charles Manson.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
It was called Son of Man and the Family. It was this kind of interesting... Theater. This
director,
Adrian Hall, was this really interesting, talented guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he turns to me, and he really, he's like 6'4" Texan that's just all energy, and he doesn't remember anybody's name. He calls you Thing.
Yeah.
Okay, Thing, you Thing.
Oh, man.
You play the guitar here. You strum. I said, Adrian, I don't play the guitar. He said, yeah, I want you to play the guitar here. This is where we need you to play the guitar. And I said, Adrian, I don't play the guitar.
Yeah.
And he stopped and he looked at me. He said, well, darling, that's why I hired you. He thought I was the guy before him. They meant to hire the guy before me.
Oh, my God.
So I went home and I said, pack our car. I think it's, but no, I stayed.
They didn't. Oh my God. Yeah. No. He couldn't. They couldn't fire you after that mistake.
It was like,
that would have been so.
And he denied it forever. He said, "Oh, I never did." Well,
oh my God. So that's a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, confident, kind of like,
yeah,
they wanted me, yeah, for what I do.
I'm the guy.
So you got married and everything back in DeKalb?
Right after we graduated in June, married in August.
Well, you knew her in college?
Yeah, we met in college. She was in the theater department, a dancer, a wonderful dancer. We started dating. We knew each other from stock and just being in the department. She didn't talk to me very much. But we got engaged our junior year and got married.
Wow, and you stayed together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See, this is and you didn't come to Los Angeles. You know, you live a nice life.
Well, thank you. I would have come if anybody would want me here.
Oh, it would have been terrible. No. Yeah, you could have ended up at Steppenwolf and in Los Angeles and God knows what the hell.
I mean,
you...
it is a weird life, you know, and how things happen. Yeah, I came back after Los Angeles.
Yeah.
To Providence, and I said, this is not going to happen. So. No, we got to figure out how to
plan
do this.
B. what did you do in like once you got into the theater there? In Providence, what did you? So that guy was sort of a crazy kind of
genius.
He was
a genius. Yeah, he
off
was
the
genius.
Grid kind of thinker. He was a '70s. He was groovy.
Yeah, but he really thought, what can the theater do that movies and television can't? Why do people need to come here?
And were they coming?
Yeah, they were in droves. Yeah, this guy was really gifted, and I'm so. Lucky that I got to spend my formative years in the theater with him.
What was his name again?
Adrian Hall.
Is he around still?
He's still around. He's close to 90. He lives in Texas.
Uh-huh.
He's back home.
Yeah.
But he taught me a ton, which is, it's like the theater, Peter Brook used to talk about this.
Yeah.
If you take this and you go, point to this water bottle and you say, this is a baby, the audience will go, oh, okay. Right. You know, but in the movies, you can't. And yet, you go to the theater now, and you still see these productions where they have the fake baby, and then the cry of the baby coming out of the sound system.
Sure.
You know, it's like, I mean, come on. Movies have to have a real baby. Theater does not.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I did a play once. I directed a play.
Yeah.
Twelfth Night. And it's about twins.
Yeah.
And nobody's supposed to be able to tell them apart. And I've seen productions where people have fake noses and they, you know, trying to look, and they never look.
Yeah.
So we're in a repertory theater with actors that can't. You mean you have a choice of who you're going to use.
Yeah.
So when the twin comes on stage, I had them stand next to each other and somebody held a sign up behind them and said, these two look exactly alike, okay? And it was never an issue after that. You know, that's what the theater can do.
But that's Shakespeare, right?
That's Shakespeare.
So like, you know, you got, you know, people were there for the words.
For the words, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, you know, I fell into that trap. I had them put fake eyebrows on and nose. And I was like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's about the acting.
Nobody really knows. Yeah.
That's right.
So,
and
if you're in movies, you got to look just the same.
Yeah, unless you're bending some sort of weird rule, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, we're going to do it different. You know, like if you're Todd Solondz and you're, you know,
well,
you're
no, shifting. It doesn't mean that,
sure.
That yeah, you can push the boundaries.
No,
and
of course.
Find out what cinema can do, but that's what he was doing with theater, and
right.
at a time when it wasn't really the actor in the audience was really his thing. You know, how do you?
Well, that's what it's really about, right?
It is. It's like, how do you put them in the same room?
I never thought about that, though, that the idea that people are more willing to suspend their disbelief to have the experience, because the experience really is about what's happening.
Absolutely.
On stage.
And as long as the audience understands what's expected of them,
right?
They'll go with it. They're really, it's amazing what the theater can do, you know? And you know, I mean, plays where somebody rings a doorbell. I saw a production of The Death of a Salesman where... In at Trinity, where there was no props, there was nothing. It was just, and there were actors, and somebody ring a bell, and somebody hit a try. You know, you just don't have to be literal,
right?
You know, it's a different world. So that was his whole thing. How do you make an audience think, God, I can't get this anywhere else. I got to come back to this,
right? Well, you can do, that's it. You can do anything you want, really, you know, with a play.
You can. You can.
And people do.
You know, and I love people to conceptualize plays. As long as you don't change the text, do whatever you want, man. I want to see what, and, you know, I want to see what you do.
Yeah.
And there's some amazing stuff.
What was done. The most challenging thing that you did back in the day with that stuff?
Acting?
Yeah, like, what was the one where it made you go like, oh, man, is this going to work?
Everything I did.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Kidding me? Every time I started a rehearsal, it was like, oh man, this is not, this doesn't have a chance, man.
But I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna work with this guy.
Oh man, yeah.
So you spent just how many years just doing plays with that guy?
14 years.
Oh, so did you get to direct and all? Is that what you learned how to do everything?
He made me direct.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to, and he said it's good for you. Do it. So the first thing I did was Billy Bishop Goes to War. And it's a one-man show.
Uh-huh.
With a piano. He comes out, Billy Bishop was a Canadian World War I fighter pilot.
Right.
And he tells this story to the audience.
Yeah.
About, and there's music and he sings. It's really a sweet, nice show. So I didn't know what to, I said, what do you do with a set for this? Do you have, like, hang air propellers? And So there's a designer, his name is Eugene Lee. And Eugene Lee was our resident designer, and he and Adrian shared this aesthetic of how to make the theater accessible and alive. And so I took the play to Eugene. I said, Eugene, what do we do? We do this maybe with like propellers on a curtain. And he kind of looked at me and he goes, I said, you know, maybe I don't have pictures of World War I. He said, let me read it. And so he read it and he came back. He said, we'll do it in a bar. I said, okay. So we build a bar on the stage, and the audience is out there, and he's we do it in a bar. So we go leave the theater, and we go to a bar. He's, no, we'll build a bar. I couldn't wrap my head around it.
Right.
So he covered the entire seating area of the theater.
Yeah.
And he built a bar.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to watch the play, you came into a bar.
Oh, really?
And if you wanted to sit down, you found a seat.
Yeah.
And if you wanted a beer, you went up to the bar and you got a beer.
On the set?
On the set. It was a bar.
Right, right.
And in comes this guy and he starts talking about his life.
Oh, that's great.
And a guy in a bar.
Yeah.
And it's jumping on the piano, jumping on the pool table, no props, nothing, just what's ever there.
Uh-huh.
And it was extraordinary.
Wow.
And I had nothing to do with it. But I learned a huge lesson there.
Uh-huh.
That's so lucky that I got that play first, and I had Eugene to help me. It was Peter Garrity was the actor. He's out here now. He's in New York now. He does a lot of film and TV. Wonderful, wonderful piece. And it just was like the light bulb went on. Okay, this is theater.
Yeah,
and
people, collaboration.
And it's conceptualization, collaboration.
Yeah,
and. And people were coming in the place and loving it.
Yeah, you know? I bet. Well, it's like they've never experienced that before.
No,
how do you know you're going to walk into a theater and that's going
to
happen?
But Eugene knew from the beginning that the scene partner was the audience because that's who he was talking to.
Right.
So we'll put him in there with him.
Wow.
And that's yeah.
And did that give you the bug to direct more?
No.
That was enough.
That was enough. No. I did direct. I made a lot of mistakes, learned, you know, I figured I know this stuff now.
Sure.
And then the next time you go out, you say, oh God, this was a dumb idea. But I did, I directed in a while and then I quit directing because I felt I ruined an actor's performance.
Wait, just once?
Well, I really felt I ruined this guy's performance.
Oh, boy. What happened?
I was trying to be helpful, and it was I did to him what every director, that when a director does to me, I want to strangle him.
Oh, yeah.
So I just said, you can't do this.
What'd you do to him?
I was stupid. I didn't know how to communicate with him.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to say. I didn't know when to leave him alone.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't allow him to find the world.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody did that to me, I would have been so pissed.
So you made him self-conscious somehow.
I just confused him, and I just thought to myself, I can't do this.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah.
I stopped, and then I came back and ruined some more performance.
But you were there for 14 years for the and during that time is when you went to LA.
Yes, was when I didn't tell anybody I was going. There was a big break in the and I wasn't in the first few shows, and I said, well, I'll go out there for a few months, and
yeah,
and I came back, and boy,
But like it's been like I must like 75. That was sort of like it's a pretty wild period out here.
Oh yeah, it was right? For me too. Yeah.
So like you know you're coming into like a sort of like you know, post 60s like insanity.
I only clothes I had were corduroy jeans.
Oh yeah, well that's
because
right.
It was cold in Rhode Island. Yeah. I was out here. It was 110.
Right.
And I think I gained 25 pounds.
Where were you staying?
I was staying in a car above a carport. Off Sunset Boulevard.
Nice.
Crescent Heights.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You turn there, and you'll see two carports with, you know, these windows.
Yeah.
They're broken, and that's where I stayed. $100 bucks a month.
Was it a hotel or just a rental apartment?
Some guy's carport.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And
So in Sunset Boulevard was crazy then, right? I mean, were things happening, or you were just...
I was a doofus. Yeah. I had no money.
Yeah.
I was trying to get auditions.
No plan, and your one guy split.
I'm no plan. It's like Cool Hand Luke, like Paul Newman says, and I never had a plan in my life. And I just was there trying to make my way.
And what happened?
I got nowhere. I remember I went to an agent's office once. I met the
no clue and nowhere.
I wasn't going to CAA here. I was going into I don't know who these people were, but
the other carport.
The other carport. And this guy had a picture of Mickey Rooney on his behind him on his wall. It was about 6 feet high.
Yeah.
And I said, "Is he a client?" And he went, "No." that was the conversation.
And also the fact that would have been enough for you to give that guy credibility.
I was excited, man. Because Mickey Rooney was... No. Yeah, so I didn't ask him why, though. But and back then, you used to pay for auditions. I don't think they do this anymore. I don't know. Maybe they do. It was $35.
Yeah.
And you brought 15 or 20 resume pictures.
Yeah.
And you left them out there, and you would go, and casting directors would come in during lunch hour and sit and watch all these actors that had
paid the buck.
Yeah. And they weren't casting directors. They were, you know,
just hustlers?
Gophers worked in this.
Yeah. So it was a racket. So how they made
it. It was a racket. Yeah. So anyway. I mean, I'm sure some people hired people from it, but so I did my Eugene O'Neill and I walked back and there was about 30 of us and we all went out afterward. Every single one of my pictures was still there.
Oh.
And everybody, nobody else, they're all gone. And so I sat there counting, 15, 15. I said, maybe I brought 60.
Everyone.
Nobody took any of them. And they were like, and they were great headshots. I took them myself. And, you know, it was just the weirdest. But that was, it was.
It wasn't in the cards, no, that trip. That wasn't going to happen.
Oh, man.
It's so weird to come out here because I talked to a lot of people that do it. I've done it before you come out here for real, like where you just, you come out here and you're like, oh, it's a big city. And, you know, like, I don't know anybody.
And
there's no way in.
And you never meet anybody either.
No. And there's no way in.
There is no way in.
And so many people come out here sort of like, well, I know that guy who went to Europe, right? Whatever. Right. But there's no way. There's no path.
No.
You know, there's this inner place. And then there's like, oh, everyone just kind of trying to... It's heartbreaking on some level.
It's terribly heartbreaking and hilarious at the same time. Yeah, I know.
And it never changes.
No. And it just gets, I think it gets harder because there's just more people.
More people, but then there's the idea that like, well, there's more outlets. There's more content. There's a bigger business. Yeah, but they see that the further you get out with the content, the less money or no money. Right, and then you just got people who are building careers on not making a living. I'm doing a lot of stuff. You can watch a lot of it. But I'm not making any money. So what is the? How did you get the first movie? What was it?
I was at the Long Wharf Theater doing a play
in New Haven,
and my now manager Bill Tresh, was there with Sandy Dennis. Do you remember Sandy?
Yeah,
Dennis?
She was great.
And
who's afraid of Virginia Woolf? Some other stuff.
Fabulous.
Yeah,
and she said to him, "Sign him."
Oh, really?
So I got a knock on the door backstage, and Bill said, "I'm Bill Tresh," and I said, "I know, I knew where he was."
Yeah,
and he said, "I want to sign you." I said, "Okay, good."
How old are you at that point?
36.
Oh man,
36.
It's going away.
Yeah, it is. It's gone. I thought it was gone. He said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be in movies. He goes, okay. I said, I don't live in New York. I live here in Providence. He says, I don't care where you live, but if I call you to audition, you have to come in. You can't say it's too far.
Yeah.
I said, well, just don't give me 8 o'clock in the morning auditions, all right?
Yeah.
You know, give me some time to get on. And back then, the Amtrak was about 4.5 hours.
From Providence to New York?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had to change engines in New Haven.
Yeah.
And if you were lucky, it was 4.5 hours.
Right.
It was five and a half.
Right.
And so I'd go in the morning and I'd have an audition and I'd say something like, you know, freeze.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know.
Take the train back. So still, this is just like adding insult to injury.
But at least I was auditioning.
And you had representation.
I had representation. Yeah. I had this manager who kind of believed in me.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an agent, and then I signed, after I got my first movie, I signed with an agency, and...
What movie was it?
The Witches of Eastwick.
Oh, yeah, you're great in that. You played the husband of the lunatic.
Yeah.
What was her name? What's that actress's
name?
Veronica
Cartwright.
She was so funny.
She's a fabulous actress. She's really fabulous.
Yeah, yeah.
She just called me the other day.
Oh, yeah?
And I talked to her once. She's been out here forever, and she's a wonderful actress, man.
Yeah, she did a lot of stuff. She always plays that sort of escalated...
Oh, she's great.
...intense character. She's great. I just saw that again recently. And, it was on TV.
So, you know, I got that. I don't know how I auditioned for it, and I got it.
And it's a big movie.
It is a big movie. And
who directed that?
George Miller.
Oh, yeah.
And they wouldn't let me on the set the first day. They didn't think I was in it.
They didn't believe you?
Because we were shooting half of it in New England. And so I drove my car my first day, and the guard wouldn't let me through.
And I said, we got a guy out here.
I said, I'm in this. And he said, you and everybody else in town, buddy.
What town was it?
A coastal town up in Massachusetts.
It was Massachusetts, right, yeah. So you didn't do scenes with Jack Nicholson, but he was around?
Yeah, he was great. He was so nice to me.
Yeah?
I saw the dailies, you know. They looked pretty good. He was so great to me. I loved him. I just thought he was the greatest guy.
That's good. That's a good experience for the first movie.
Yeah,
to be hanging with Jack.
Jack and Susan Sarandon and Michelle Pfeiffer and Cher, and you know, and this dude from Providence. Yeah, it was great. And Veronica, it was fun. It was really nice.
That was a substantial part. That was a real part.
Yeah, it was. It was a part. I actually was in Silverado before that, but I had two scenes where I said howdy.
Yeah.
And then you can't do that, and they shot me.
So yeah, that was it?
That was it. But I was there for 7 weeks.
Where'd they shoot that?
In Santa Fe.
Oh, that's nice. I grew up in New Mexico.
Yeah, they built this gorgeous set, and it was amazing.
There's a lot going on in that movie. I remember that movie.
Not with me. I was in the hotel for 7 weeks. You know, it was the biggest snow in the history of Santa Fe. It was like 2 feet deep.
Oh.
I didn't have a car. I couldn't go home because I was a cover set.
Yeah.
Which means... if it's a bad day outside, you go inside and shoot.
Right.
And so they wouldn't let me go home because I was a cover set.
Right.
So I was going out of my mind. Nobody knew who I was.
Ugh, and you had two lines. And yeah, I guess it gets a little isolating.
Larry Kasdan had a party the last week we were there. And I was just stir crazy. And I went to the party. Nobody knew me. But Larry, who's a great... Larry's such a great guy.
Yeah.
He came over and he said, Richard, how long you been here? I said, 7 freaking weeks.
Yeah.
He said, no, I meant at the party. Oh.
You didn't work with him again?
I did.
On what?
Darling Companion.
Oh.
A movie I did with Kevin Kline, Diane Keaton, Diane Wiest.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one.
It kind of came and went.
Yeah.
It was a sweet, sweet movie.
I thought that his movies, I was always excited to see his movies. He's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy, and he's a wonderful guy. And his wife, Meg, they're just terrific people.
So that got everything rolling. But you had a few small parts. I'm trying to see. Were you in Hannah and Her Sisters?
I was. That's really, I think, the first movie I did. And that's, my father had a stroke. And I was in the beginning and I had like 5 lines.
Uh-huh.
I played a doctor who was on the phone with Woody, telling him
he may
have a brain tumor.
That's right.
And so my dad had a hard time getting like his coat off, and he was in the theater and the thing was starting and they were kind of late, and he was taking his coat off. He had popcorn down. He put his popcorn down. He said, I heard your voice. He said, Jesus, and I got stuck. He said, by the time I got up, you were gone. So they sat, they watched the whole movie and then sat through the beginning again
to
watch my debut.
Isn't it weird that feeling of like, you know, having this, that what you and I would think was a tremendous break, right? But you know, when you really look at it in relationship to what they're taking in, you're like, it's still embarrassing.
I know, it is like, that's it?
Yeah,
that's
right.
It. You don't do it anymore?
Right. So this is what you committed your life to?
Well, it's funny because my mother had a high school boyfriend, Bill Indical, Bill somebody, who went out to L.A. to become an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was always talking about Bill. Oh, he's doing really well out there, Bill. And so my dad would always roll his eyes. Yeah. Bill's doing great. So he said, finally, a movie came to DeKalb that Bill was in.
Yeah.
He's a boxing movie. Uh-huh. So we went to the theater and my dad's sitting there. No Bill.
Nothing.
Got to the big fight at the end. All of a sudden, the last thing, a referee steps in. Break it up. That was Bill. and my mother was like, see, that's Bill.
That was it.
So I was Bill.
Yeah.
In Hannah.
Yeah. But had they seen you do theater, though?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you're doing a lot of little movies out here. So you're coming out here a lot.
Yeah, I did. I worked out here a lot.
You were in Wolf. So you worked with Mike Nichols.
I did. I worked twice with Mike Nichols. Love Mike Nichols.
An odd movie, but nonetheless a fully realized movie. When he was like, you know, was he great to work with?
I loved him. You know what he did my first day? I played this cop, this kind of generic cop.
Yeah.
And he said, what do you think about this guy?
Yeah.
I said, well, I don't think he's really very bright.
Right.
From what I'm reading here, the questions he asks.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, okay, that's interesting. So he said, let's think about this. And it's the first day of shooting. I'm in my office, and somebody, Mike Nichols, yells out my name, and he said, your mother is on line two. The camera's rolling.
Right.
It's not in the script.
Yeah.
So I pick the phone up and go, yeah, Ma. There's nobody on the other end.
Yeah.
I said, no, Mom, you put the television on three, not the cable box. It was this thing. And then I said, because I was typing and making mistakes, I said, Mom, where's my whiteout?
Yeah.
And finally I said, what are we having tonight? And I went, oh, God. All right, now hang up. And there's this pause, and Mike Nichols in the other room says, so you live with your mother. And that kind of set the tone for the guy.
You know? That's great.
Yeah, and that's what he was like. He was so interesting.
He threw you right into an improv.
He just did, and I'm not great at them, but it was like one of those things where you just, all of a sudden, it starts making sense.
Yeah, that moment where you realize, like, okay, this is what this is.
Right, this is what this
and
is.
And it's for a reason. So I got to lock in.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I loved him. I just loved him.
Yeah,
I never heard him repeat himself.
Oh, yeah?
No, he was so interesting and just really an interesting guy.
Well, in terms of like, so that's a very active engagement with a director, it seems to me. That, you know, because I talk to some people, I've talked to directors who, some of them are sort of like, I hire the actor to do the job, I'm not going to...
You know. Which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, if they let you do it.
Yeah,
don't put your hand there. Put your hand over. He's like, I'll put it somewhere. Yeah. I'll show you where I put it.
But you deal with both of those types.
Yeah, you deal. You know, and most directors are terrific people.
Well, you worked with David O. Russell early on.
Yeah.
Now I remember that role.
Yeah, right.
That was an odd role, right?
It was really
you and Josh Brolin.
Yeah, yeah, we were married.
I think it's a great movie, Flirting with Disaster.
I do too, yeah.
But he must have been very intense. I mean, it was before he was huge.
Yeah, he was. He was intense, yes. But he's really smart, and he's
knows what he wants.
He lets you play.
Yeah.
You know, he really wants to see what's going on and have. He likes to jump in there and be part of it. You know, he's really active and.
Oh yeah.
And you know, he's. I mean, there was. You know, you knew great movies were going to come out of him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, you just had a feeling. Yeah.
Clint Eastwood, you worked with?
I did.
I'm trying to remember which movie is that?
That was Absolute Power, and the one scene was me shooting in. Missing.
Uh-huh.
I think that's why they cast me, because I missed.
Yeah.
If had they wanted an assassin who was really good, they would have cast somebody else.
Yeah. He's pretty matter of fact.
He's very laid back. Yeah, he's very laid back. I was, you know, I he doesn't like a lot of takes.
Yeah.
He likes one.
Right.
That's what he likes.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you feel a little pressure. It's like, oh, God, I had to put a rifle together on screen.
Uh-huh.
And I had about 20 minutes to learn how to do it.
Right.
And, I mean, I was sweat. You never saw so much sweat on me. Are you ready? He said, yeah, I'm ready. I had to take the butt of the rifle, click it on. I took the scope and clicked that on. And I took the barrel and I screwed the barrel on the rifle. I'm, you know, like the guy's been doing this whole life.
Right.
The rifle's in this little case.
Right.
And then I take the bolt. I take a bullet. And he said, hold the bullet up to the light and blow the dust off the bullet. And he did this. And I said, oh, my God, why don't you do it? Because you do it great. He was so good at it. He was great. And so
he's been blowing dust off bullets a long time.
I mean, he's Clint. He's Clint. You know, he's Clint. He's amazing. And then, so I took the, blew the dust off, put the thing on, and I aimed the gun, and they said, cut, and the barrel fell off the gun. I had missed the threads, and I was holding it with my fingers.
After the cut?
After the cut. And he went, he just made it, huh? And then I was supposed to go down and jump in my little Miata.
Yeah.
And take off. And I put it in reverse and went backwards.
I thought
he was going to fall off the chair. He was laughing so hard.
Oh, good. Well, that's good.
I provided a day's entertainment for Clint.
That's funny. And he did all these Farrelly Brother movies.
Yep.
Because they're New England guys.
Yes.
They must have taken a liking to what you do.
They didn't know I was from... I actually built a house on the street they grew up on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and...
In Swampscott?
In where is it? Cumberland.
Cumberland. Oh, yeah,
which
yeah.
I lived there for... I was in Providence for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And I built a house out in the country.
Yeah.
And they grew up in that street.
Oh, my God.
And I met them... How did I meet them? I was doing a movie that they were producing, and they weren't. And Bobby said to me, where do you live? I said, Rhode Island. He went, I'm from Rhode Island. I said, where? I said, Cumberland. He goes, I'm from Cumberland. Where? I said, Thomas Layton Boulevard. He goes, that's where I grew up. He was like freaking out.
and that got you in.
That got me in.
Well, obviously, you know, you've worked with a lot of... big directors.
Yeah, they're great. I mean,
Coen brothers.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh, Joel and Ethan are just... So somebody said, what's different about working with Joel and Ethan Coen?
Yeah.
And some actress, I can't think of her name, she said, well, there's two of them.
Yeah.
You know, right. They're amazing. They're amazing.
What is
guys.
That set like? It seems very controlled.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
No.
No, it's loose and fun.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because their movies seem so goddamn tight.
Well, they know what they want.
Yeah.
But they also let you do your work.
Right.
I mean, they want to see, they watch.
Do they encourage improvisation, or you mean they
no,
just,
no? I mean, sometimes if it comes out,
right.
If it they're not going, don't do that. They don't do a lot of takes. They're great.
I just watched Burn after reading recently again.
Great.
Because the first time I watched it, I'm like, well, you know, it didn't resonate as much as it should have because I love the Coen brothers. So like, why, cause I have to do this with Lebowski too. Like, why is it a great movie? You know, why is it a Coen brothers movie? And you were like the emotional heart of that movie.
Well, I was like, there's not a lot of redeeming characteristics in any of these people. which they just adore. It's the only movie they wrote with specific actors in mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, they called me up. They called me up. And they said, Richard, Joel and Ethan are on the phone. You know, since you're managing Hard Bodies, we'd love you to work out a lot before you come to shoot. I said, I do.
Yeah.
No. We want you to lift weights. I said, I do. And there was a pause. Okay, never mind.
What were they expecting? That you're going to get ripped?
I don't know.
But the longing of that character and just that, you know, and now after talking to you for a while, that moment, like that moment where you're about to get shot, you know, for the wrong reason. Like, yeah. It seemed like something you could probably really identify with.
Yes, absolutely. And my favorite moment was when I show... Francis McDormand, the picture of me as a retired, I was a Greek Orthodox priest.
Right, right.
And she says, well, that must have been a good job. I said, oh, it was.
That's the end of it.
Great job, yeah.
Yeah, she's great, and you'd work with her again recently in the
Olive Kitteridge.
Oh my God, yeah, that was heavy, huh?
It was fun.
Yeah,
it was fun.
That's some real acting stuff going on there. It just seemed like, you know, like, because it was a small cast, right?
And, yeah, you just kind of live your life, you know. It's just right. It was alive, man. It was just alive.
Yeah, yeah.
It was. You spend so much time with these people. That it was great.
You like working with her?
I adore. I mean, I adore.
She's so good, right?
She's fantastic. We've done 3-4 movies together, but she called me up and asked me to play Henry.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was her baby. She produced it. She bought the rights to the book.
Yeah.
She hired Jane Anderson, and they worked on it for 2 years to adapt it, and they took it to HBO. And, I mean, this was her baby, and it was
great.
Oh, it was a great, job.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic job.
Yeah, yeah. And it did good.
It's weird
to
call acting jobs. I know. But,
well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, having wanted to do it and then getting the opportunity to do it, you know, later in life, which I am, is that, like, you know, people who, like, because you sit around a lot.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
People said, isn't it boring? I said, yeah, it is.
It's great.
I love it.
But, you know, you probably also love the, like, what I had to learn just recently was that, you know, you sit around a lot, but here comes your 2 minutes.
Yeah, here you go.
And you know, you got to really lean into it.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's what you've been sitting around for. Yeah. So, you know, instead of complaining about
it. Well, you have to be careful how you sit around.
Uh-huh.
You can't
eat too much?
Well, you can't be doing a lot of stuff too much. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if all of a sudden you got to go do something totally different.
Right.
I think Gene Hackman always said, you need to be relaxed. That's what you need to be. You have to be relaxed before you do, before you work.
Yeah, you worked with him on that Just a Clint Eastwood movie?
I never met him. Never met the guy. He was in the movie, but I didn't.
Oh, isn't he something to watch?
He's one of the great ones. Yeah, he's one of the great ones.
Like, I think he said something like, you know, I know how to fill up. Like, you know, like he's a real, yeah, you guys are similar, natural.
But he's Gene Hackman.
Yeah, I know.
He's Gene Hackman.
Well, you're Richard Jenkins.
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean. But he must have been somebody that inspired you.
I loved him. And Duvall. I love Duvall.
No, those are the two, right? There's, you know, naturals. There's something.
Yeah, and Spencer Tracy for me was, I just love Spencer
Tracy.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Spencer Tracy, like, he was sweet and good.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you watch some of those performances.
It's a lot of heart.
Amazing heart. You know, just, he was like ahead of his time.
Yeah.
He was really, and then, you know, Brando comes along and we all did.
Ruins everything.
And you just say, how do you do that?
No, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God, you know.
How do you do that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know if it's necessary.
You don't do it by trying to do a Marlon Brando.
That's right.
What you don't.
All
of these guys are who they are.
Like Montgomery Clift too is another.
I mean,
kind of
in Red River. You see him in Red River. You go, what is this? Is so different than
right
what these other guys are doing.
Right. You can feel it,
and it's just so real and alive. And
yeah.
And you lean in to watch him.
Yeah.
It's like he's not coming after you. You got to go watch what he's doing.
So you're here for the Globes. Hold on. You won an Oscar. That was exciting.
I didn't win. I was nominated.
Oh, God damn it.
No.
What happened?
I lost.
God damn it.
I didn't have a chance.
Who were you up against?
Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. Yeah. It was fantastic. Sean Penn won for Milk. Ooh, he was amazing. Brad Pitt was up for, and Frank Langella was the other one.
Oh, yeah, for
Frost Nixon. Yeah.
I don't know. That was a great movie, though. You were great in it.
I got last. I had last.
Did they tell you that? Not only did you not win.
You got the fewest votes. No, they didn't.
Yeah. Hey, Richard, we just wanted you to know that you weren't even close.
No.
I mean,
we thought we'd tell you before the award so you can enjoy yourself.
That's the call you get in the car.
Yeah.
It's not your night.
Not your night. No. But, you know, I don't know why one would expect it to be your night. You know, it's...
Yeah.
It doesn't...
Well, I thought you won, so you should have just went with it.
I should have.
But now this is the Golden Globes for this bizarre movie.
The Shape of Water.
Yeah, I watched it. You're great in it.
Thank you.
And it was another heartbreaking person. Another longing person who can't, you know, this is not working out.
It's not working out, but it's finally somebody who realizes it.
Yeah.
And comes back and says, you know, I got nobody, and you're my friend, and why am I not understanding that?
Yeah, and why am I not helping?
Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. It's a great arc, and
What's interesting is it's one of those movies that I wouldn't have watched because I'm like, I'm not a fantasy guy. You know, I don't want to see, like, what is it, a fish guy? I don't know. What is this?
And it's not at all.
There's a part of me that talks like that in my head. Yeah. It's like, who watches those movies? But it's not.
No.
I mean, it's like, you become...
It's human. It's a human story.
Well, yeah, it's a totally human story. And you get so invested in the human story of that. And it's sort of genius the way the characters are put together.
You know, it's how do you do this and make this work? It's just, until I saw it, I didn't know how he was going to do it.
Well, what were those sets like? I mean, were they, because
it was the closest I will ever come because to being in a 40s Hollywood movie classic.
So they built all that stuff.
They built it, and it looked, my apartment was, everything was authentic in it, and nothing was real.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't real. Yeah. The peeling paint was, it was the most glorious poverty you ever, you know, the reds and underneath was green, and there was nothing haphazard or accidental about this movie.
Right.
He's
it's like a theater set, almost.
It is like a theater set, but it's... This is somebody who's figured out what movies can do that theater can't.
Right. Oh, yeah.
The opposite of what Eugene Lee. And Eugene Lee saw The Shape of Water, and he flipped.
He did.
He said, look at that. That's what a movie can do.
Right.
That's a visual story that this guy has told.
Right.
And, you know, it's like Lawrence of Arabia. You see 200 horses coming around the corner. That's 200 horses coming around the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
And Guillermo is a very visual director, and so how he was going to tell the story, I wasn't sure.
Uh-huh.
But I love this movie. I just love this movie.
Yeah, I was like so, like, I tell you, at the end, I was like, Dad, this better not be it. You know, like, because, like, I was literally...
Don't do this to me.
Right. And I was texting, you know, people. I'm like, I'm not sure I can handle this right now. Like, I don't know if I can watch the end of this.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah.
It was that's the truth. I was like, it's just too, the world is too much.
I know. You know? I know. It's like it's just too much heartache here.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to do Bambi again.
No.
Yeah. And Michael Shannon, I've talked to him. He's an intense dude.
He is. He's great.
Everybody was really good, and it's such an interesting
cast.
World. Yeah. Like, what year was it really set in?
62,
because there was that weird mixture of reality, you know, that, you know, it was grounded in that era, you know, in a very real way.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes, yeah.
But you know, because of the and she was so good.
She's fantastic.
The whole thing was, it's really interesting. And I guess, I don't think I saw his other movies. What he did, Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah, Pan's Labyrinth, which is, I hadn't seen a lot of his movies. And so then I started watching him. I mean, you know, you understand this guy always has a real reason for doing something.
Yeah.
I think this movie is probably as close to him as one you'll see.
Oh, yeah?
It's I don't know. I just keep thinking it's more Guillermo than anything he's done.
Oh yeah. Well yeah. I'm just happy I watched it and happy I got to see you, and I'm happy I got to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
And I wish you luck. Now, are your kids in show business?
No, well, my daughter's a writer. Uh-huh. She was an actress for a while. Never really liked it. She was really good, but never really liked it.
Uh-huh.
And she became a writer and is very happy.
TV and movies or no?
A little of everything.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And my son is a CPA at Price Waterhouse Coopers.
Out here?
And no, in Boston. He's in Boston.
Oh, see, like, you strike me as a New England guy.
Well, I'm a Midwestern guy, but I know. I've been in New England for 48 years.
And it's like, you know, there's something great about New England.
Yeah, there is. My son was a drummer.
For?
For him. He was going to be a great drummer.
Oh, yeah? Was he in a band?
No, he was just a great drummer. Uh-huh. And I want him to be a drummer.
Yeah?
And he said, I want to be an accountant. I said, why would you want to do that? You could be a drummer. And he is
total opposite.
He has never regretted. He loves his job. He's
like the opposite of what you went.
It's
what
exactly you were, right. It's exactly. I was like disappointed my son would be a professional drummer.
Pursue a heartbreaking life in drumming.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, and he said, no. I said, why? He said, because I don't love it enough to work as hard as I'd have to work to be good enough to make a living at it. Oh. He said, no, this kid had it together.
He knew his limitations right there. And saved himself a lot of heartache.
And he loves being a CPA.
Does he play the drums anymore?
Yeah, they're sitting in my basement.
Oh.
And no, he doesn't
play. You don't call him like once a year and go like, come on.
Well, he comes over. When he comes home, he plays. He sits down and plays.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, that's nice. Just to keep you happy.
Every Father's Day, he would send me a drum tape that he would make to some song that I liked.
Oh.
He would listen to the song, learn the drum part, then he would play it with the song.
Yeah. Oh, so that's
that's how you
make your actor dad happy.
You make your actor dad happy. And my daughter, when she stopped being an actress and became a writer, she just became. You could tell that was meant to be.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just so great.
So they're happy.
My kids are. You know what's that thing? You're only as happy as your saddest child.
Uh-huh.
My kids are both doing really well. Knock on wood. Yeah,
that's great. Do you have grandkids?
My daughter. I have a 7-month-old granddaughter.
First one.
First one. My son just got married in June. My daughter's been married to this fabulous guy who's a writer.
Yeah.
And so
now you got a grandkid.
I have a grandkid, Franny. Beautiful, beautiful.
Where do they live? Close.
They live in Brooklyn.
Oh, it's
and
not
my
too
son's in Boston. Oh, so we're,
East Coast.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks,
man. And good luck on Sunday.
Thanks.
Oh, and also, I loved your work on 6 Feet Under.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I could say that about a lot of things, but, you know, we just, I feel weird when I just start going through the resume. Like, oh, yeah, you're in that. Oh, that's great.
Oh, don't ever feel weird about it. I'm an actor. Why, thank you, Mark.
Big fan. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
That was Richard Jenkins. The Shape of Water, obviously, is in theaters now, and I wish him luck tonight at the Critics' Choice Awards. I'll see him there. It's too early to play guitar. I'm recording this early in the morning. Can't do it. I think I'm going to go look on the roof. Don't worry about me, though. That's what I'm going to do. I'm probably going to do it, though. Now, you know what? I'm not going to do it, okay? Don't worry about me. I'm not going up there, all right? Have a good day. Boomer lives!